Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shut it or I'll plug it. Why is it so dark?
Follow me, Pilgrim.
Brother Whorfing!
I have a proposition for you, Carpenter.
A canta? Call for me, Mallory.
Nana.
If you see Em, tell him dinner's almost done. And he mustn't forget to take the boy in the cellar out back before it gets dark either. Did you hear me, Mallory?
Absolutely impossible.
The door's been sticking lately. Give it a good push.
Lay the table. We're almost there.
No. No, this isn't right.
If it doesn't rain tomorrow, we can get started on repainting the coracle. What do you think?
You're not standing there, Nana. I'm not taken in by this, whatever this is. You hear me?
We'll have enough for leftovers tomorrow, I reckon.
You're dead, Nana. You're dead and faceless and rotten. You've been that way for decades. There's no way for you to ever come back to me. This is a dream or it's a delusion, and I'm confident in that, no matter how real all of this looks.
Would you like to say grace, Mallory?
You know how I can be so sure of myself, Nana? Because I know I've lived this night already. I remember every word in the routine. I know when this performance is supposed to be set. It's the worst night. The most shameful night of my life. The night that makes my nails curl tightly into my palms when I'm staring up the stairs and I think of it.
Do you hear me?
You're very quiet, girl. Everything all right?
This is the night when you turned from the sink and you said to me like it was nothing.
It's getting dark. Damn, Em. He knows he mustn't be out this late. You'll have to do his work for him, Mallory. You're old enough now. Yes, it's about time. Unlock the cellar, take that boy by the halter and lead him down to the garden. Make him ready for the angels to come and see that he's tethered properly too. Lose him and I'll make you chase him down yourself.
You turned your back on me and you went on with the washing up. And I summoned up every ounce of my courage. I licked my lips and I told you no. No, I didn't want to do it.
What do you mean you don't want to?
You weren't angry. Not yet. But I could feel the first ripples of your anger coming on. I told you I felt sorry for the boy who was sobbing in our cellar. The boy who'd just come out here to deliver leaflets from door to door. I hated hearing him cry. The sound drifting through the floorboards. Impossible to ignore. Impossible to shut out. I said it wasn't fair that I should have to take him out into the garden. I was too young, and Em was taller than me and stronger, and I'd done my household chores for the day already. And besides, we just sacrificed another girl down by the water just last month.
A coward comes prepared with the soundest arguments. Courageous souls need none at all.
I wasn't a coward, I told you. I wasn't afraid. I just didn't want to take that boy down to the sacrificial post at the bottom of the garden tonight. Another night, another time, but not tonight. I begged you. Not tonight.
And why not?
I don't even remember what I stammered out, dear. I wasn't articulate back then. I've never been articulate, but back then I was worse. But you understood what I was thinking. You knew me like nobody else. How I hated you for that.
If we want our God to hear us, this is the method. It's the only method. It's the way that's always been. It isn't a pleasant duty. It isn't something we should take joy in. But it's a part of life. The boy's to be given tonight. And you're the one who's to do it. Do you think you're above this, Mallory?
I did. I told you I didn't.
You think you can live rich and well and bountiful on crab and fish without making a single offering to the water in return? Do you think you can live in ingratitude and not suffer the consequences of that? Or would you prefer to keep yourself apart from the God of your people and pat yourself on the back for being kindly and starve to death alone in the wilds with only your kindness for company? You're an organ in the working body of this world, Mallory Glass. No amount of scornful looks and sour remarks is going to change that. You're no better than what's come before, and you're no better than what's coming after. So, you will participate.
In that moment, Nana, I hated you so much I wanted to kill you myself. and the days and nights to come, I stoked my hatred and I dreamt of killing you over and over again. Grabbing you by the collar, fixing you to the sacrificial leash, dragging you to the very end of the watery garden and tethering you there amongst the dead and eaten boys and girls, in the same place where you'd left Em and I to drown. Leaving you there, no matter how much you begged or pleaded, and returning to the cabin where we'd dance and laugh and play in the golden light. But I was afraid of you, too. And I loved you all at once. And besides, it was the last spring. 4 months later, they came and they killed you for me. And they took me away from this place. And then I grew to hate them even more.
Stop crying. Down to the cellar now, Mallory. It's time.
I went to sleep last night amongst the hills, underneath the stars. A secluded place, a heaped accumulation of old stones where I could shelter from the rain and the wind. A natural formation, I thought. But perhaps it was a dolmen or something worse. It should be dawn by now. I'm not back in this cabin, and you aren't here. And I'm not living through this night again. This is a trick. Nothing but a trick, and a lousy, unsubtle kind of trick at that. I've stumbled into the haunt of some stray, scavenging god. Some frail and feeble thing stealing into my mind from the outside. And now you're trying to trap me here. I went to sleep in the wrong place, that's all. It's just bad luck. Do you hear that? I figured you out. You haven't fooled me, you haven't trapped me here. It took me a heartbeat to see through what you were trying to do to me. You failed. I'm leaving.
The door's been sticking lately. Give it a good push.
Lay the table. We're almost there. Fuck off. If it doesn't rain tomorrow, we can get started on repainting the coracle. What do you think?
All right. That's fine. There's a way out of this no matter what. It'll have left its mark somewhere. There'll be signs to follow. Nothing on the walls. Maybe on the floor.
We'll have enough for leftovers tomorrow, I reckon. Would you like to say grace, Mallory? Very quiet, girl. Everything all right?
Whatever you are, you need to understand that I won't put up with this. I won't submit. I won't rest until I've found my way out of this and I've torn you to pieces.
It's getting dark. Damn, Em. He knows he mustn't be out this late. You'll have to do his work for him, Mallory. Unlock the cellar, take that boy by the halter, and lead him down to the garden.
How dare you take this shape? How dare you choose this night? The worst night. The most shameful night. If you want to speak to me, do it with your own face and your own tongue.
Hey! You can't actually be certain about tonight, can you? You find it difficult to keep the facts straight in your head. You can't even be sure, as you stand in your Nana's kitchen again, that this was the worst night of your life, the most shameful night. Perhaps it was the night after, when M finally came back home, looking stoned or hungover, refusing to answer any of Nana's questions about where he'd been. And as he sat and painted the coracle as punishment, you danced around him in the silt, and you boasted to him about what you'd done while he was away. You pretended you were proud to have participated, proud to have helped your Nana. You scornfully acted out the soft, desperate cries of the boy that you'd left tethered out by the water. You boldly bragged that you intended to carry out the next sacrifice yourself as well, as he'd been doing it for far too long and you were owed a proper turn. And M looked at you like... What was that look he gave you? Because it wasn't pride like you were hoping for. It was something else. How many worst nights of your life have there been, Mallory? How many nights does it hurt to remember?
If I go to the cellar, if I play this out, will you let me go? Fine. I'll go. I understand the game. I see how this works. Okay, I'll go to the cellar. Let's see this through.
The steps are as high and wide as you remember. It's like you never grew up at all.
No. Come on now. That isn't fair. You can't be here.
Nana kept her fishing nets down here, and her copy of the silt verses, and her altar with the sodden candles that could not be lit, and three tall cages with hooks upon the walls to secure the catches. This place frightened you. It always frightened you. You never felt at home down here. It seemed less like a true part of the cabin and more of a distinct place, a haunted place that had crept into the shadows underneath your rooms without permission and taken up residence there. You always felt like you were walking down those steps to meet with a monster that dwelt in the black below. But there was never anything like that down here, was there? Only a boy in a filthy and torn postman's uniform, mewling in the darkness, with sackcloth tied over his head. Perhaps even the same sackcloth she'd made you wear when you first arrived at this place and she tried to offer you to your God. Because your Nana was prudent, saved everything, threw away nothing. And you, who cared about fairness above all else, you understood at once that the grace that had been shown to you should be shown to this boy in turn.
You're not... here.
The boy is indistinct beneath his sackcloth. Nana and M caught him in the night while you were still sleeping. You'll never see his face while he's alive. You'll see his face later on when Nana pulls the sackcloth off. You'll gaze at his swollen and crab-eaten flesh, hating yourself and ashamed of yourself, drinking in every detail. The cheeks, engorged with river water and pocked with holes. A rough and clumsy miracle, to be sure, but enough solid work has been carried out here by the angels of the tide for Nana to nod begrudgingly, pat you on the shoulder, and commend you for a job well done. His face isn't the only one you remember, is it?
No. It isn't.
That young couple, the ones you lured to the abandoned temple house on the river road, Mason waiting patiently from the shadows to see that you followed through. They were the ones that came next. They saw you as a friend. Until that last awful moment when they couldn't any longer.
I swear I'll end you for this.
And my face. You won't ever forget my face, will you, Mallory? I was still pleading with you when you blew it to pieces. Flesh and fragments. Last night, when you went to sleep in the shadow of the stones, you were thinking...
I was thinking Nana's face must have looked the same.
And shame rose in you like the tide.
You're not real. This is a performance, nothing more. So let's get this over with and maybe you'll be satisfied.
Let's get this over with. Yes, that's what you kept whispering to yourself as you stood there before the whimpering boy and you tried to work up the courage. Let's get this over with. And once it's over, you'll have made it past the initial fear and past the initial doubt. And every time you do this from now on will be so much easier. No more delays. You had to act. You reached for the hook upon the wall. You took the boy's chain in your hands and it jangled like bells at a summoning.
Are you a god? I don't think I've ever spoken to a god. Not really.
What sort of creature did you honestly think you were going to become once it was over? Did you really think life was going to be easier for you from that moment on?
Not a god, then. Maybe something else. Maybe you're a saint. Maybe you're something created, some haggard, hard thing of old regrets and self-loathing and self-disgust, roaming the wilds, looking for prey. Were you human once?
Were you? When you do remember tonight, in the long, sleepless nights of your life that's to come, sometimes you try and drive it from your head by reassuring yourself that things could have gone very differently. You could have set the boy loose. You could have set the cabin aflame and fled. M could have returned home early and freed you from this burden. There are so many different ways this could have gone, you keep telling yourself. But there's no version of tonight where this didn't happen, Mallory. There's no version of yourself that didn't take the chain into your hands. You led the boy up the steps, gently, offering him soothing words, promising him that he'd soon be free. Just as you'd seen Em do it. You led him right past the kitchen door, and you knew Nana could hear that you were doing as you were told. She could hear that all of your lies were having no effect at all, and the boy was still crying and struggling and begging you not to do this. You were still half hoping that she'd put a stop to it. Decide you were too young. Take the halter off your hands. Deal with him out of sight. But Nana didn't come to rescue you. And you had no choice but to keep walking out through the cabin door. The boy fought you with every step, but he was blind and he was bound, and his feet slipped in the mud. And you made it to the post, yanking the chain through its links, yanking it tight, so he had nowhere to go but wait for the rising tide. And you stood back and observed him, tethered, as Nana might observe a casserole steaming on her stove. Did you whisper one final sorry to him?
I did. I told him I was sorry. I'm certain I did.
It didn't help him. Not at all. You turned back, and you could see the bright and comforting lights of the house, where dinner was waiting for you, and you left him behind. You didn't have to watch what happened next, when the angels came to take him away.
Oh, damn you! Damn you! Please, I said that's enough! It's over! It's over! Do you hear me? I did it! I made my chest! Let me go! Let me go! Please let me go!
Lay the table. We're almost there.
Do you have a name? Whatever you really are. Was there ever anyone here to give you a name, or did you survive here alone like stinking weeds by the water's edge?
If it doesn't rain tomorrow, we can get started on repainting the coracle. What do you think?
Are you lonely? Is that why you're doing this? Does nobody talk to you out here? Tell me who you are. Talk to me.
We'll have enough for leftovers tomorrow, I reckon.
Mason took me back to the cabin once. Years ago now. They'd burnt it to the ground. Blackened wood and rotten ruin. You're rotten and gone. And this place is rotten and gone. And Em's never coming home because he's dead too. He died alone and in chains because my Nana was too obstinate and far too proud. She had to keep flaunting the old ways because anything less would be an insult to the god she loved. And they came for her. As clever as she was too stubborn to change. So, who are you? Cairn Maiden, maybe. Is that you? I'm sorry I yelled before. Is there a moral lesson here? Some kind of initiation I'm not fully appreciating. Are you teaching me how to bury the dead? Leave the past behind? Let's find out, shall we?
This is how you've always been. You never knew how to solve a problem that wasn't smashing it to pieces.
Usually has an impact.
Your fury always followed in the footsteps of your shame. You take a kind of sour pride in tearing apart everything you'd built. You couldn't stand to be seen. So you convinced yourself time and time again that if you only burnt everything down, you'd have a better chance of escaping in the smoke.
Stop talking to me. You're nothing but masks, nothing but angles.
You broke everything life gave you.
I'll break you, you son of a bitch.
That's why you abandoned your God. That's why you abandoned your family. And that's why you abandoned the young boy and the frail old woman and the girl who walks alone.
I didn't. I left her with...
No, Mallory. You just left her. You left her with a sick old man who was struggling to cope, with nowhere to run to and nobody to help them. Because they felt like weight, and your whole life has been spent trying to tear yourself free of that weight. The girl is dead already, Mallory. She's lying in the woods, her ribcage opened up like a doorway. The sick old man is wheezing his final breaths as he lies beside her, mumbling words that will not help. The frail old woman is lying out in her garden, wheezing your name.
Carpenter.
The door's been sticking lately.
No, I'm not going back. Do you hear me? I'm not going back again.
Give it a good push.
This was the very first place, wasn't it? Where you'd leave people behind. Squatting under the boiler. The only place where you were small enough to fit. And nobody would see you even if they opened the door. A place where you could hold the world at bay.
Oh, not you too. Gods, not you too.
You abandoned me, didn't you? I came back for you in bellwethers when it mattered. Why didn't you once consider coming back for me?
I would have, Faulkner. I would have tried to find you. I didn't know where you were. I had no way of knowing.
I'm lying face down in the silt, Mallory. In my final moments, as I drowned beneath the tide, I was reaching out through the dark water, searching for a hand. Your hand. To pluck me from the torrent. A hand that never came.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
The door's been sticking lately.
No!
Give it a good push.
Lay the table. We're almost there.
If I lay the table, will you let me go?
If it doesn't rain tomorrow, we can get started on repainting the coracle What do you think?
Sure, Nana. We can do that tomorrow.
You're a very quiet girl. Everything all right?
No, Nana. Nothing's all right.
Well, that's no good. That's no good at all. Tell me about it.
When I came back to the faith, I told them I wanted to go by a different name. Very common, of course, amongst new initiates. A little controversial for a child of the parish, especially someone whose grandmother was Adelina Glass. But Mason was there to push it through. And I never cared if any of the elders gave me disapproving looks. I didn't want to be Mallory Glass anymore. Names can be daggers. They can become something you need to run from. And my name was a dagger when it came out of your mouth. I think I also imagined, somehow, that if I became Carpenter and I stopped being Mallory Glass, I could shed who I was before. I could extricate myself from what I'd done before. The face of the boy I left to die in my grandmother's garden. I could leave you behind, Nana. Where you belonged. It didn't work, of course. And now I'm making the same mistake all over again. New beginnings, new gods, a chance to become someone better. And it isn't helping me. None of it is helping me. I understand that I've been given a chance. A chance to finally start moving forwards, but there's so much life behind me now. And it's weighing me down. I'm drowning in it. I feel so hollow, yet so heavy. So maybe I was right after all. There's no such thing as a second act. There's only debris. And I keep thinking that I must have lived too long. You had it right before. Fury and shame. Fury drives me onwards. Shame halts me in my tracks. That's the way it's always been. Because I could sit with my shame and my doubt forever. My regret for everything I've done, and I could let the long grass grow over me. And every time I take a step forward, I can feel my anger for the things that have been done to me, yanking me about this way and that way, and I realize I'll never know which way is true and which way is leading me into the mire. I hesitate, if only for a heartbeat, and then the shame overtakes me once again.
It's like walking with ballast. Like anchors in the flesh. And everyone must feel like this, you know? I think that's the truly awful thing. We've all got this piling onto our backs. How are we meant to build anything on this earth when we're all so alone? We're all so tired. And we're all so twisted. Well, I told you mine. Now tell me yours. What are you? Really?
There's an old story, a very old story, you've always known it, about the Trawler Man and 100 other ancient gods of air, of fire and earth and wood and water. All of those with a halfway reasonable claim to have been the very first. The beats of the story are always the same. A hero with a great desire or a desperate need. The hero is struck by a vision, or they hear a strange voice imparting wisdom that has not been heard before upon this earth. To receive their heart's desire, the hero must sacrifice something they value dearly. The hero does as they're told. They sacrifice their husband, wife, their child, with knife, stone, or flame. And at once the hero receives some divine reward, or great miracle falling from the sky, or sprouting from the earth. And they go running back down through the hills to tell the people of their village the good news. And so the very first god is summoned forth into existence. A few faiths add a coda too. They say that the hero shed a single tear in shame and in sorrow as they sacrificed the person they loved. In that instant, a second god, a god of lasting regret and awful shame, sprung into being and seized the offering as its own, dragging the hero and the sacrifice down into the depths of the earth together. And this is why we must not flinch, and we must not weep when we make our offerings. The old traveller, the man who was both an executioner and a priest, must have been thinking of that coda when perhaps he lay down in this place a great many years ago, wrapped in furs and pelt and dying from the cold. He sat upon the very height of the dolmen, and he gazed out across the landscape, and he felt shame and sorrow for the family that he'd abandoned, and for the faces that had stared up at him so many times from the flat of his great stone altar. For all feet that tread this earth for long are siblings to the hands that clutch the knife. Tears fed the rock, and he withered and changed, becoming something else. A saint of tears and shame, to catch those who came to this place thereafter.
Is that what you are, then?
P- Perhaps. Or perhaps these stories are your own increasingly desperate imaginings. Another faint memory of a story your Nana told you once, a very long time ago. Because it's only natural under the circumstances to imagine that you are not dying here alone. That you're speaking to something which can understand you. And you are dying here, Mallory Glass. Hour by hour.
How do I get myself out of this?
You won't.
You can't.
Then what am I supposed to do?
You don't need to do anything. It's already happening.
Stop struggling. Stop fighting. Stop trying to break free.
Let the weight bear you down.
And in time, you won't see our faces. You won't hear our voices. You leave it all behind, Mallory.
That can't be it. That can't be the only way forward.
It's the only second act you'll ever have. Trust me on that, Mallory.
Yes. Yes, I do. I'm leaving this place, Nana. And I'm not coming back.
Foolish.
Obstinate.
Useless.
You won't be rid of us. There's nowhere to go.
I know that, Nana. I'm leaving this place behind. Come with me. All of you. Come with me. It's dawn, and I'm back in the hills, amongst the old stones. The homesick corpse is gurgling and grumbling familiarly in his rucksack. It doesn't take me long to find the prayer marks of whatever god was summoned here, carved into loose stones that lie scattered here and there. I was right all along. I missed them in the dark. There are bodies out here too, buried in the long grass. Rotten sleeping bags, yellowing bones. Lying still and silent. Other travellers, no doubt, who spent the night in this place and were trapped by whatever lingers amongst the stones. There's an older body, too, resting upon the very height of the dolmen, its back against the flat of the rock, hidden from view. A withered and ancient corpse, its hands hugged around its knees, wrapped in tattered pelts. Gazing out over the landscape of the valleys and the distant river below. I take a second turn among the stones. Carefully and methodically, I scratch out the prayer marks so that nobody else will be caught in this place. I spend the day working away at the soil, hacking with the butt of my rifle until it buckles and breaks, then tossing it to one side and working with my hands. And I bury them, one by one. This is the place. This has always been the place. You were always walking towards this moment. We were always waiting for you here. The soil will swallow you. The roots will tear at you. Foxes and flies will bear you away. There's nothing left to hold on to. There's nowhere left to go. There's no need to worry anymore. These were the Silt Verses, and these were our disciples, in order of their arrival. Maeve de Broom, Liz Ryan, Carmella Brown, Beener, and Harlan Guthrie.
How deeply peculiar. Brother Armpit, this is your lure site, isn't it? Did you ever see one of them wake up before? No? Ah, well. Come on. Let's get her to the van.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.